Here's an oldie but a goodie from the archives from the Side Hustle Show Greatest Hits Collection.
Six figures in pre-sales in 6 months with no list.
Welcome to the Side Hustle Show, where aspiring part-time entrepreneurs learn how to turn their side hustle dreams into reality. Because your 9-to-5 may make you a living, but your 5-to-9 makes you alive. And now, your host, Nick Loper.
Hey everybody, Nick Loper here. Welcome to the Side Hustle Show, where it's all about ideas, action, and results. A little bit of all of the above today. This is episode 126, six figures in pre-sales in 6 months without even having a list. How about that for results? Now, what I mean by pre-sales in this case is selling something and collecting money for it before it even exists. That's the ultimate product validation, right? You've got almost no risk. You don't have to build the thing yet. Now, of course, you've still got to deliver, and we'll get into that as well, but a very, very eye-opening episode for me. So I was introduced to my guest by Andy Drish over at the Foundation. He said, Nick, you got to talk to this guy. Side Hustle Nation is going to love him. He broke all our sales records at the Foundation and even broke some of our rules along the way. I'm excited to welcome John Logar from BusinessUnleashed.com to the show. He's a professional consultant, entrepreneur, and perhaps most importantly, one of the most natural-born salesmen you'll ever hear. Now, John talks pretty quick, so I compiled all my notes and highlights and questions and scripts that he offers up into a free PDF download that you can grab at sidehustlenation.com/126 or through the link in the episode description of your podcast player app. Ready? Let's do it. We're talking about building software businesses or building software applications and specifically pre-selling them. So one question that I had right out of the gate is, how are you selecting the businesses or the industries that you're targeting for these different pre-sale efforts?
I guess to give you some context or some understanding, I'm a big believer in always going to a market that spends money. I don't like going to markets that don't have money to spend. So for me, businesses have to be of a certain size. A niche market has to be competitive, because if you've got competitive businesses, there are pressures in that market. So businesses have got to be turning over at least 2 million plus, have between 10, 50 employees plus. They've got to be spending money on marketing in a lot of ways, because companies that spend money on marketing are investing in growth. Okay. They've got to have physical assets. So it means that there's pressures in terms of investment. So physical assets like offices, buildings, equipment, showrooms, that sort of stuff, right? Okay. So those criteria, if I can formulate a target market that fits that criteria, it's very easy to build a list of targeted industries to go after. I also look for growth industries as well. So industries that are on the incline, those industries will tend to face pressure. If a business is facing pressure, it needs to systemize. Automation is the name of the game. And I believe with all my research and understanding over the last few years, everything is about automation, and it is really about speed of distribution and connection with the market. So for me, those selection criteria, 2 million plus, 3 million plus, you know, employees, assets, investing in growth, right, are all big indicators of who I would target. And that could be any niche market. My first niche that I attempted software with, by the way, I've never built a website in my entire life. I've never programmed anything. I'm not a graphic designer. So the skill sets to develop software, like user interface and all that sort of stuff, no idea. Okay. There are people out there who are far better than I am. What I'm great at is finding those people and saying, hey, I need something that does this. Can you help me out? And what's the investment, or what is it going to cost me to do that? And how can I put that in the market and actually make a profit on it? So for me, in finding an ideal market, my initial attempt at this was to go after a high value market. So I went actually into the solar industry was the first niche. Okay. And also in environmental. So environmental engineering. So I was doing green build construction at a commercial level, which is a fairly small market on a global level. I mean, I'm based in Australia, but I was talking to companies in Europe and the United States. And a lot of these companies are kind of at the innovation, at the growth phase. Everybody's talking about climate change, and we need to be looking at sustainable energy solutions mm-hmm. in buildings. So there's a lot of new technology. And when there's new things happening in an industry, there tends to be a lot of pressure. That was my hallucination at the time. We can call it a hallucination. So
let's slow down. I wanted to ask if there was any tools that you liked on just the selection criteria side. Like, are you looking on LinkedIn? Are you looking on Manta? How are you finding these businesses?
I was looking at industry reports. So I was looking top 100 players in engineering, top 100 players in – I was going to industry associations and looking for award-winning companies in their industry. So to me, it was very easy to find them. Go to an association website, pick a niche. Every major business niche in the world is attached to a governing body or an association that arbitrates or gives credentials to those members that are part of that association. So – there's a fantastic association in the United States called the Association of Association Executives. There's an association for associations, yeah? It has 10,000 members worldwide.
Wow.
It's big. That's 10,000 niches. So there's no shortage of niches to go after.
Yeah, not at all.
And in those niches, there will be several players that actually fit that selection criteria that I've shared with you. Okay. So finding them, not so hard. Yes, you can go to Manta and do all that sort of stuff. One of my favorite lists, and I'm happy to share some insight here, but there's two lists. There's the Inc. 5,000 Fastest Growing Companies list. And this is Inc. magazine, and then there's the Inc. 5,000 Fastest Growing European Companies list. The beauty of that particular list, which comes out every year, is that it gives you the growth percentages of the industries and niches that are growing fast. So this year, security, insurance, communication, those sorts of niches were the fastest growing niches. In Europe, it was all about construction, energy, health, all those sorts of niches were growing very fast. So within those categories, there are obviously sub-niches. So health industry is huge. Mm-hmm. If you look at the health industry, there's probably about 500 sub-niches within the health industry. Right? So throw a dart, take your pick and start. Because at every level, there is a commercial entity that is attached to each of those niches.
Oh, that's cool. Looking at the Inc. 5000 and these industry associations, what's your initial outreach like? Is this email? Is this phone call? What does that look like?
My philosophy is a good game is a fast game, or a fast game is a good game. So I like to do things very quickly. I hate cold calling. I don't know about anybody else that's had to go through that process of trying to engage people. But what I found was, for me, I needed to create an excuse to have a connection. So I would find out who the CEO of the company was, and then I would quickly craft an email saying, hey, just basically want to know your opinion on industry trends, what's happening, where the important issues are in the industry. You're a recognized leader within your market. You've won awards or whatever the case may have been. I'd just love to take 5 minutes of your time to ask one question. And that one question would be, in terms of your opinion, what are the most important key areas of growth in your industry, basically, is what I was going after. And that would open the door up to other questions. So I would send that email, and then I would literally pick up the phone straight away as soon as I've hit the send button and just dial in and say, hey, I just need to speak to Bob. I just want to make sure he got the email that I shot through. He knows about it. And then I'll generally 70% of the time I get in. And then my opening line to Bob is, hey, Bob, you don't know me from a bar of soap, but I just wanted to make sure you got the email I just sent you. And he went, no. Half the time the email never gets there.
Right.
So my next lead into that would be, look, if you give me 60 seconds, I can certainly let you know what this is about. And at the end of that 60 seconds, you can decide whether or not we can continue the conversation. Is that fair? And Bob will say, yeah, sure. It's a reasonable request. So now I just let him know what I wrote in the email, which is, I need to ask you a question. So then it starts a conversation. So it's pretty simple stuff. So I would do that. Now, my conversion ratio to get through to Bob, and we'll call him Bob, and getting through the gatekeeper is a fun game. Mm-hmm. And you know, that could be a whole episode of itself. But for me, with the gatekeepers, if I'm trying to contact somebody specifically, I kind of act like I already know them. And I give the gatekeeper as little information as possible. And I'm very, very specific. So I'm very direct. So there's a level of confidence in my voice when I take the approach. Now, 70% of the time, I'll get the CEO on the phone.
Wow.
The 30% that I don't, where the gatekeepers in the United States, apparently the gatekeepers, her name's Becky.
Oh, right? It's Becky, always Becky here.
Becky is always the one. In Australia, it's Karen. In the UK, it's Charmaine, right?
Oh, okay.
But in Australia, Becky. Good old Becky. Some Beckys are very, very thorough. They're great gatekeepers. They do a great job to protect their CEOs. But generally, you can get through to them.
Okay. So how's that first conversation go? You 70% of the time, you're getting through to Bob and you say, hey, I just have this question for you.
Yeah. I'm just talking to people just like yourself. So I create an affiliation to the fact that I'm talking to other people of significance in his industry. I might even mention, and I wouldn't have spoken to them yet, but that I'm reaching out to certain people that this person may know, or reaching out to certain companies that this person would understand, would know who they were. So I'm trying to create a slight affiliation or affiliation to build a level of acknowledgement of credibility. Right?
Yeah.
in my call. So I will say, now, I'm not misleading the person because I am speaking to his peers as well, or I am connecting with his peers. Mm-hmm. If I've connected with his peers, I'll say, look, I just spoke to Peter Johnson over at ABC Company, and he was very gracious with his time. And I know that you're in the same market and you're also one of the leading people. I just want to touch base and ask you this question. So my question will go around, look, the reason I'm asking these questions is I want to look at the significant areas that are important, and I'm looking to feed back the information and look perhaps solutions that may offer some opportunities down the track. But that's not what this call is about. This call is about you and your opinions and what you think. And then just walk through some questioning. What do you like about this business? What don't you like about this business? How long have you been in this game? Number one thing, most important thing to you moving forward as an industry, where do you think your opportunities are? And they'll start highlighting those things. What are the factors that are holding you back, or where are the friction points that are holding you back from realizing those opportunities? And that's where the conversation starts to really open up. So by getting into just being very fairly general, and when you ask people for their opinion, let me tell you, they're very forthcoming and I'm more than happy to give it to you. And the key part of this thing is I'm not going in there to say I'm going to build some software, right? In fact, that word doesn't even enter my vocabulary in any of these conversations. For me, it's to be as present as I can be, to direct the conversation through questioning, so to control that conversation through questioning, and to just listen, because you never know what can happen out of a phone call when you give people that space. It is amazing how much gold they will give you. So the purpose of my call is to come in with that concept of a level of understanding. And at the end of that, to be able to feed that back so that I'm on the right path, and also to perhaps identify the area that is red flagging for them, and then saying, okay, well, tell me a little bit about that, and then walk through the process of asking questions.
So there's one company, the solar company in Australia.
Yeah.
Was that the one with the $500,000 logistics problem?
No, they were a company that had a $250,000 a year problem.
And this just came up out of like, hey, what do you see as your biggest challenge right now? Or what bothers you about your business or something?
It was really weird, because what happened in that phone call with the solar company is he had just got off a call to get a price for a presentation folder that he was developing for a particular niche, and he didn't realize how expensive the folder was. Like, it was quite a costly expense because of production and printing. He was looking at spending like $50,000 just on a brochure, basically, which is a significant amount of money. I was just saying, well, who's the brochure for? He said, oh, it's for realty industry. I said, oh, okay, so why are you targeting realtors? And so, well, we come in and we're developing energy saving systems, and one of the areas is hot water systems. And so we want to nurture a relationship. They'll refer vendors or clients to us, and then we obviously generate those clients. And we've seen success, but we're looking at building a strong relationship. And I said, so how much does it cost you to manage that relationship with real estate agents? He said, well, I don't know, I haven't really worked it out. I said, well, we know that there's $50,000 in brochures right now, and that was a figure that hurt. Mm-hmm. Like, you realize that was going to cost you. But there's 50 grand in brochures, but what happens with a brochure? Well, our guys, so how many guys? There's two guys. Okay, so two guys are going to go out there and what, they visit these people physically? So yeah, I said, well, how many agents are there? So there's 160 agents that we've actually targeted that we are starting that relationship process with. I said, so how long does it take to visit 160 agents? Because I would imagine that's not, you know, it's not like they're next door. Mm-hmm. Some of these people are all over the city, right? We're talking travel time, so we're talking vehicle expenses, but we're also talking the time of the salesperson to go out there and have those conversations. That takes into cost. And then there is the cost of managing those relationships, because one of the problems is the pricing for their solutions would change so dramatically in the course of a month. You might have two or three different price changes. So if you quoted a figure 1 week, 2 weeks later, that figure would be redundant and incorrect. So you would have to get another price. So this created another friction point where the person would have to call up and get another price for the actual solution.
Okay.
So this was a really big problem, because there was no way around this whole dynamic of managing the sales relationship with these realtors.
You're just following this guy down the rabbit hole at this point.
Yeah, yeah. How much does it cost? What? And we worked it out. So we worked it out, you know, two people, full-time, $50 an hour, including 401k, or we have superannuation in Australia, you know, health and medical, there's taxes. Then you've got two vehicles that you're servicing on the road. They cost you $1,000 a month. So there's 24 grand a year. The time alone, the actual time cost was $4,000 a month. And then, so you had $50,000 on the brochures. So you're already at, what's that? We've got 12, so it's 48,000 plus some ranges, 150,000 plus the vehicles, 170,000 plus the fact that you had to go and like there were other things that were mitigating costs. So it worked out to about 250,000 in costs.
Wow.
And I said, imagine if there was a place where all these people could go to and actually access your information in real time, where you didn't need to go and physically visit all these people, but you gave them a portal that they had physical access and it was dedicated to them specifically. Would that be useful? And he went, wow, that's exactly what I want. He actually articulated the point to me. He said, you know, what would be really cool? Because I asked him, well, knowing that you're spending $250,000 on this, what do you think would be better? He said, it'd be really cool if we could just send them somewhere where we could actually update that pricing and it's up to the minute. So whenever they accessed it, it was always the right price, right? So they didn't have to think about it. And we could give them a system where they could put their data or the information that we require to be able to facilitate, make that easy for them. And it'd be really cool if we had a way that we could regularly update them or communicate any changes physically to them as well. Now, for those of you who are listening, what I've just described to you is a website with a back end that you can update information on, and you can add a autoresponder sequence to support that whole facilitation to mitigate $250,000 worth of expenses.
Yeah, I can build you that for a lot less than $250,000.
Yeah, we built a portal for $35,000, but the cost of that portal was about $1,600 because there was a little bit of programming in there as well. There's a little bit of support that was attached to that. So the profit was high. But I said, right now you're spending $250,000. In 4 years' time or 5 years' time, that $250,000 is going to turn into $1 million, $1.2 million in costs.
Yeah.
Is it worth investing $30,000 up front to get this nipped in the butt, which is $20,000 less than your brochures that you're about to print to get that done?
You're not the technical guy. So how did you go and get this done?
Okay, so this is what happened in my scenario. I said, listen, I just want to figure something out because we might be able to significantly save some money here. I knew what the solution was once he said what he said, right? Because anybody with half a brain in our world would see that would be the solution.
But it's important to let him, then it's his idea, right?
Exactly, exactly. It was his idea. So I basically said, look, if you give me 20 minutes, I'll just hop in your boardroom. I just want to make a quick phone call to somebody. It wasn't a phone call, it was an email. I wanted to just have a quick phone call to somebody. I just want to verify something. I can actually give you a rough idea of what it would cost you to get this fixed up, right? So all I did was hopped on an email, sent an email to – I actually sent out – hopped on Odesk, created a job description outlining what needed to happen. So just roughly this is what it's going to be. And I basically said it'll be – give me an idea. So give me a range for a project price of something like this, right? Within 10 minutes, I had – 16 replies, right? Well, it's Odesk, so there's always people trolling, yeah? My criteria for selection was people who had done over 1,000 hours worth of work, who had specific knowledge and understanding of programming. So I was very selective in my criteria, but I literally had 16 people quote me on the job within 10 minutes. All I did was double the quote. So whatever I was quoted, I just looked for it, scanned through very quickly. Whatever I was quoted, I just doubled the price to what I would think the real price would be.
Okay, just to be safe.
To facilitate, just to be safe. And then I just sat down and thought, you know, what's a couple of deals worth to this guy in profit?
This edition of The Side Hustle Show is sponsored by Squarespace. You probably already know that Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, but it turns out Squarespace is a lot more than just a pretty website builder. For example, did you know that Squarespace has a new AI-guided design system called Squarespace Blueprint? I was playing around with this the other day. It's pretty slick and might be the fastest way to get a professionally curated layout tailored to your brand or business and optimized for every device. Did you know that Squarespace can also host your online course? You can create the lessons that your audience is going to love, then you add your paywall and set the price. You can charge a one-time fee, you can sell subscriptions, and you can customize the whole thing to fit your brand. And finally, flexible payment options. Whether you're selling a course or a digital product or a physical product or your own services, Squarespace makes checkout seamless for your customers by letting you accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay. And in eligible countries, you can even offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and ClearPay. So head on over to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/sidehustle to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. When you're hiring, it feels amazing to finally close out a job search and hit the ground running with your new hire. But what if you could get rid of the search part and just get matched with qualified candidates? Well, now you can with our sponsor, Indeed. It's simple. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. The matching and hiring platform is trusted by over 3.5 million businesses worldwide to connect with great talent faster. And 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. For my next hire, I'm using Indeed to tap into a talent pool of 350 million unique monthly visitors. And what else is cool is Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use it, the better it gets. And how about this? Side Hustle Show listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Side Hustle Show. Just go to Indeed.com/Side Hustle Show right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Side Hustle Show. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What was the quoted price, out of curiosity?
Oh, the quoted price was, I was getting between $800 to $1,600.
Okay, but you already told you it was a $250,000 annual problem.
I knew it was a quarter, well, he told me.
Yeah, basically.
We sat there and worked it out together. At the end of that, he was pretty much upset about it. He was deflated because all I did was there's an open wound. What are you going to do? You might as well just scratch it.
Bleeding neck problem.
Yeah, just keep scratching it away. You know, stick your finger in there. So in that process, in that 10 minutes, I roughly had an idea of how much it was going to cost for me to facilitate. And one of my criteria was the fact that we could deliver the solution within at least 4 weeks.
Okay.
Right? So I just wanted to know that we can get this done in a month, right? Mm-hmm. Because he was shelling out in that month, he was going to be shelling out $25,000, right, in costs. Okay.
Yeah.
So I got the feedback. And then not more than 20 minutes after that, I made a phone call to a person just to verify a couple of coding issues around internal spreadsheeting with number changes and stuff like that, because I just wanted to know. But all up, the project was $2,400. I quoted $30,000. I said 15 up front and then 15 on delivery.
Okay. Wow. That's a nice margin.
Yeah, that wasn't bad for an hour's work.
not bad at all. Not bad at all.
Facilitation in that, and there was project management involved. And now here's the funny part of this story, Nick, just to sort of cap this off at how ridiculously simple this was. These were the third-party tools that we used to develop this product, right? Essentially, we developed a niche portal for the real estate industry specifically. We used a program that a lot of people may or may not be familiar with called Optimized Press.
Okay.
Right, as the front end. Then we used another product, which is a free product plugin called S2 Member, to manage the process. We branded it for the realty industry in that city that this company was in. So it was exclusive to them. We then designed the back end, which was providing them the method to be able to utilize the system. So it was an easy process. Essentially, it was just a series of forms that they had to fill out. So it made it easy. We did a step one, step two, step three, press the buttons. So we made that the interface was very basic, very easy to follow. It gave people exactly what they were looking for. We put pricing structures in there that were changeable. Basically, it was an Excel spreadsheet. We used Microsoft LifeScribe for the PowerPoint presentation that we embedded into the back end when they signed up. And all we did was brand the portal. The only marketing for this is we actually created a business card that gave them a private membership to this. When they opened the back end, it was a responsive theme. So we had a little download this button on your iPhone or your Android where you can bookmark and access it from your screen. So all it would do is open up the system. They could log in and access all the information from any portable device. And MailChimp was the autoresponder service that was connected to it. So it was pretty cheap to build. And the only real cost was in the programming for the price changing software. And then I created a 3-minute video on how they actually could change the price. That was it. So that was the components: Optimized Press, S2 Member, MailChimp. And then somebody came in and put some Excel stuff in there so that I could embed it in the back end. They could change. And that was basically how they managed the process.
And everybody's happy.
Everybody's happy. So that took less than 6 days to build.
Oh, but you promised him a month.
I promised a month. Now, here's a silly thing, and this is just me. I'm thinking, man, I quoted this guy, let's get it to you at the end of the month, and I've got the thing sitting here now ready to go, right? And, like, if I go back to him tomorrow and say, hey, it's done, he'd be sitting there going, man, I paid 30 grand. He had this done in 6 days.
Yeah, right? Starts to raise a little eyebrows.
Yeah. Well, this is just me. That was just my thing that was going on in my head. So what I did was I held on to it for another 6 days and then said, hey, got the beta version ready to go, but we can actually start using this now. So it was kind of a under promise, over deliver scenario. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But here's the thing, that system that we put together made within the first 2 weeks of him actually utilizing the system, it made 30 grand for him in 2 weeks.
Wow, that's awesome. Oh, so it paid for itself in 2 weeks.
Well, today that particular system is averaging about 100 grand a month.
Wow, that's great.
So from that solution. So yeah.
With that in mind, do you think you undersold it as doing as a one-time thing versus kind of the recurring SaaS model?
If you look at it now at face value, yes, I did undersell it, but it's not what I was thinking was. For me, it's like, here's the costs. What do I want to make on this as a profit? The second piece of software, I put it back in support so people actually paid for support. So the solution that I solved there was a $450,000 problem. And then in there, because there was a hosting and database, and then there was security protection and all those sorts of stuff that was involved, and plus there was an element of training, the price point was higher. But the back end was $1,000 a month in support, which was basically attached to a help desk that was attached to a developer that would do on-the-spot quick changes. So it was only costing me $15 it was $50 for the developer, and I was paying $50 for the security and hosting. So my cost was $100, but my profit was $900. And that software now has been instigated now for 18 months. And in that 18 months, there's only ever been 2 support tickets.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you've done this half a dozen different times in different industries, different markets. Like, yes. This is just fascinating stuff.
But I did follow the process of, I joined the foundation to understand development of software. Mm-hmm. That was my thing. I didn't know anything about software. I didn't realize in my my ignorance is bliss, but in my ignorance, in my day job, in terms of facilitating solutions from an agency point of view in my consulting world, all I was doing was outsourcing solutions. I was basically playing the middleman, finding a contractor to facilitate the work for the client. This was no different. All I was doing was finding a developer or a person who had a skill set to deliver the project.
Right, brokering deals.
It was brokering a deal, basically. So in this mindset, out of the 7 products that I built, 2 of them were SaaSable products. One of them I did SaaS and sell, and now I'm onto a third SaaS project. As we're speaking right now, I'm in the middle of a pre-sell. And a third SaaS project that I think is going to be fairly significant, I have a feeling it is anyway. It's looking fairly promising right now. My take was find the problem, articulate it as elegantly as possible. So this is the idea, is to create the magic bullet scenario. People will buy the magic bullet. If it solves a problem in an elegant, simple fashion, it addresses the issues to gain the benefit, whether it's saving money or making money, whatever the issue is, or saving time, which is a big issue as well, then people will buy it. And the other thing is every idea I come up with tends to fail. The beautiful thing, and in taking the concept of the stuff that I garnered from learning with the foundation, was let the market come up with the idea.
Yeah, absolutely. Let them, like in this case, he told you the problem, and then you kind of know where you want to steer him, because you already kind of know in your mind, but let it come out of his mouth.
The last thing I want to do, I say this a little bit tongue-in-cheek, I want to be a little bit of a dummy. I want to be naive in this process, because I want to allow that person to, if you give people that space, they're so intimate with what's going on. They know in half the cases what the solution or what a potential solution should look like. Mm-hmm. They've already got the kind of, because they're dealing with that problem or those issues all day long. And so they're sitting and saying, but this is just the way we handle it now. But it'd be really cool if we found a better way of doing this. And they find themselves in moments where they've asked those sorts of questions. They've had meetings with people talking about the very thing in terms of, well, how do we solve this? What can we do? But because they get caught up in the day-to-day, they never take care of it. So in the long run, what happens is they continue to work a poor structure, incurring costs, because that's just the way that we do it. Historically, this is the way that it's been. But as they grow, when that pressure mounts, then the problem becomes greater, and the greater the problem becomes, the more attention is paid on it. Then it's like, well, how can we fix this?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's essentially what happens.
Any rule of thumb on pricing these different solutions?
For me, it's on value. So worst case scenario would be 1 in 10. So if something is going to save you $500,000, then you could probably sell it for 50 grand a year.
Okay.
4 grand a month for a $500,000 saving.
Yeah.
It's worth it, 50 grand. Yeah, so totally. The rule of 10 is a common rule.
Okay.
I've often asked the question, what would you pay for that? And they give me this figure, which generally is 50% more than what I would have charged.
Okay.
And then I'll say, well, I'll tell you what, I'm happy to let you have it for that.
Yeah, we got a deal. Press R, there's 4 copies.
Yeah, you hold, I'll hold the paper, you hold the pen.
John, thanks so much for joining me. I think this is a really fascinating one for all of Side Hustle Nation. What can come out of these different conversations? And you never know, let somebody articulate their problem and go about building a solution for them. So let's wrap things up with your number one tip for Side Hustle Nation.
Listen very, very carefully. If you're out there trying to build or create something, spend time in that market. If you're going to open conversations with people to really understand your customer, make sure you keep in touch. Make sure you engage them more than once. This is a mistake that a lot of people make in developing software. They don't speak to their customers often enough. Every program that I've built has always come from the communication and the adjustments and the understanding from a customer's perspective. So know your customer well. And at the same time, always validate. Don't go building ideas, dreaming that there may be one day a customer that will pay. Validate as quickly as possible. If you have a buying customer and they're willing to pay and give you money in your bank account before you develop an idea, you know you're onto something.
I love it. Everyone, it's businessunleashed.com. John, thanks so much. And we'll catch up with you this weekend.
Nick, thank you. It's great to talk to you. And yeah, looking forward to a drink at the bar.
Hey, it's 2023, Nick here again. That was some vintage Side Hustle Show from 2015, and it's an episode I refer back to quite a bit for John's idea extraction process. Really cool stuff. A few important notes and updates. John mentioned Odesk, that is now Upwork.com, and his site, BusinessUnleashed.com, is still active, but more recently, I've seen him over at ConsultingUnleashed.com if you want to go check out some more of his stuff. If you're new to the Side Hustle Show, thank you so much for tuning in. I think this is a great example of some of the gold that's buried deep in the archives at this point. And while I'd love for you to go back and binge on hundreds of episodes, I also understand that might not be the fastest path to get you where you want to go. So what you can do instead is get a personalized playlist. All you got to do is go to hustle.show, answer a few short multiple choice questions, and I'll build you a custom curated playlist based on your answers to those questions, based on what I think are going to be the episodes that are most relevant and most impactful for you. So you can add those to your device, you can learn what works, and you can go forth and make some more money. Once again, that's at hustle.show. Thanks so much for tuning in. Until next time, let's go out there and make something happen, and I'll catch you in the next edition of the Side Hustle Show. Hustle on. As a Side Hustle Show listener, I know you're driven. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. But I also know you can end up hustling and driving yourself into exhaustion, overwhelm, and even burnout if you don't stay anchored to why you're doing it. That's why I want to recommend another podcast that will massively support your side hustle. It's called What Drives You with host Kevin Miller. Kevin's a former pro athlete. He's a lifelong entrepreneur who started 19 different businesses. He's a father of 9 kids, an author, and a mountain adventurer as well. He knows both the glory and the dark side of drive and has devoted his life to helping people who want to drive further, faster, but also enjoy the ride every single day. He brings on today's most influential people in personal and business development to see what drives them and get their guidance on the key ingredients that power our own drive. If you want to fully harness your drive and find peace and fulfillment in the process, go find What Drives You with Kevin Miller wherever you listen to podcasts.